Hello, Adam Kay. Thank you so much for being here today here at Fontainebleau with me for the festival Série Série, as we say in French. You were a doctor for 6 years, and then you became a best-selling author with your first book, This Is Going to Hurt, and now you have adapted it into a TV series that you are presenting here at the festival, so there's a lot to talk about. First, how does one reinvent oneself as so completely from doctor to book writer and script writer?
I'd love to say I had a plan, but I didn't and I don't. I worked on labour ward, and it wasn't so much a conscious decision to leave as a realisation that I couldn't cope with the job. And I had a very bad experience on labour ward. It wasn't my fault, but it didn't make it feel any better. And I realised I didn't have the emotional wherewithal to cope with the bad days at work. And I stepped away from medicine and work out what I wanted to do next. The truth is, I assumed that I'd have 6 months or so of doing something else, and then I'd go back to medicine in a different type of medicine. So I'd probably done my last shift on labour ward, but maybe general practice might suit me better. I don't know. As it happened, I got lucky and I started working as a comedian, which went, you know, okay. And I got work writing for television comedies, and then 6 months became 12 months, became 2 years, became and I evolved from performing on stage to writing comedy to writing this this book, which did well and led to this big drama series of This Is Gonna Hurt, which I've been talking about at the festival today.
So did you have any academic training at all in writing books or series? Because writing for television is pretty specific.
I have no training whatsoever apart from medical training. I lasted English at school when I was 15 years old, and that's that. I don't totally believe that you have to, that it's necessarily a teachable skill. I think you can make people better at writing, but I think there's often something you either have or you don't. But the best training there is for writing is writing. And the more you write, the better you get. And I'm, you know, very embarrassed of so much early writing I did. But I shouldn't be embarrassed. I just know that I've grown, and in time I will doubtless be embarrassed of the stuff I'm writing now. And I always try as a writer. Well, you want to grow. I specifically find projects where I'll learn something new. And, you know, I like my next project to be different to my last project. And no training whatsoever. The best advice I was given as a writer was when I was 6 or 7 years old, which is that every story has got a beginning and then a middle and then an end. And I think that applies whether I'm writing a postcard or a book or a 2-minute sketch for a comedy or a 7-episode drama for TV.
Just get from beginning to end.
It's got an arc. That's how you tell a story.
Yeah. So apart from the obvious fact that you write about your experience as a doctor, do you find a link or common points between these activities, maybe in the perception of the public as superheroes of both doctors and people in the film industry?
I think it's very, very dangerous to think of anyone as a superhero unless they're literally in a Marvel film. And I think you cause damage to both doctors and patients by having that. I remember I was once, when I was working as a doctor, I was working in a clinic seeing pregnant patients, and I was wearing a blood pressure cuff because I'd been to a new doctor, and they measured my blood pressure, and it was very high. And I said, I've just come off labour ward, of course I'm stressed. They said, no, you need to do this for a day. So I was sat in clinic wearing this cuff, and a patient said to me, it's funny, you don't think of your doctor as getting ill, do you? But you don't. Yeah. You don't think of your doctor as getting ill or getting sad, or, you know, having any of these, you know, frailties. Mm-hmm. Because if you think of them as that, you think of them as the sort of person who might make a mistake. And you don't want the person who's taking a scalpel or choosing the dose of your medicine to be capable of making mistakes. But of course, they are very, very human. And their human frailties often come to the surface more working in such a high-pressured environment. And if a doctor doesn't think of themselves as being human, they're much less likely to talk about their struggles and their worries. And that's something that I talk about a lot in my books and in the TV show, is being open about it. Every day I would come home and my partner or my friends would say, "How was your day?" And you go, "Fine, thanks," because that means you don't talk about it. And so many doctors, nurses, midwives, paramedics, "How was your day?" "Fine, thanks." It's never fine. And the right thing to do is to talk about it. And there are similarities between you know, medicine and the media, in terms of, you know, people who sort of, you know, puff themselves up and pretend they're something they're not. But the advantage of the media compared to medicine is the stakes are very low here. I mean, if no one watches my show, everyone gives it naught stars, no one died.
True. Yeah, so what you depict here, so in the book, in the series, and what you're talking about, is the incompatibility between private social life or light things and the hard rhythm of working at the hospital. And it's something that many people can understand. Sometimes when your work life is very intense, you feel like your friends and your family can't understand, but you still have to find a way to connect to them and to open up to them. But I guess, is that something that you found especially hard as a doctor, and maybe less so now that you're not a doctor anymore?
Yeah, it's the work-life balance is very difficult to maintain when you're a doctor. And what happens if you're working on labour ward and, you know, there's an emergency and you're meant to be going out for dinner, but there is, you know, there's a patient who's, you know, who's having an emergency which needs your attention. There's no spare staff to come and help. It's obvious. If there's no decision to make, if that was a decision, you'd have never become a doctor in the first place. So you help out, and so you're always texting a friend saying, "I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cancel for drinks tonight."
It's not on the same scale, of course.
Of course. And they understand, they realise that your priority is for this pregnant patient, not for their anything dinner else, reservations, yes. Of course. But the second or the third time you've cancelled in a row the same person, you've become the flaky friend, and they stop inviting you out, and your social circle contracts. And that's a very real thing that I think a lot of doctors recognise. And I'm not sure that's the sort of thing that I've necessarily seen that much on television before. And that's the sort of thing I was keen to lean into.
Yeah, it's a side effect that we don't see that much.
Yeah.
So you are also a comedian, and you talk some more about your experience as a doctor on stage. Did you need that variety of ways to express yourself after you spent years answering fine things to people when they asked how your day went?
It's very interesting. There's the, don't know if you've ever been to the Edinburgh Festival. So I think it might be Europe's biggest arts festival. A lot of comedians, you know, come up to Edinburgh in August and they have a show. And I decided one year to read out from my diaries. It's the first time I'd talked about medicine since I'd left. And I was I had no plans for a book, no plans for a TV show. I just thought that would be an interesting thing to talk about. There was lots of medicine and politics in the news. And that was, I talked about leaving medicine when a bad thing happened, and you always want a healthy mum and a healthy baby, and I had neither of those two things. But I'd never talked about that before. My boyfriend at the time, now husband, the first time he heard about this probably most impactful day of my life was me saying it on on stage, whereas somehow more comfortable saying it than sitting him down and talking about it. And that led to the book. A publisher came along and wondered how much more I had. And then the success of the book led to the TV show.
I feel like in the medical world, the sense of duty and public service is so strong that when people have to leave because it's their mental health that's at stake, they feel guilt sometimes. So after you quit, you found a new way of helping the cause, sort of, bringing attention to it and telling your truth about the medical world. Doctors save lives, of course, but can drama and comedy also be a force for good, which is the question of the festival?
So I felt and still feel a huge amount of guilt for leaving medicine. Mm-hmm. I still have the same feeling that led me to being a doctor in the first place, which is, as you know, pathetic as it sounds, to help people. That doesn't go away, and I suspect at some point in the future I'll return to it in some way, shape or form. Drama can and should make a difference. The arts are hugely important, and the world would be an impossibly worse place were it not for the arts. I think you'd have to have quite an ego as a writer, producer, director, to think that that's comparable in any way to saving a life on a labour ward. But, you know, it still has value, and everything I do, I try to make sure it has a purpose. So this is a show about mental health of doctors, and it's led to some interesting discussions about, are we doing enough to support doctors? And particularly the topic of suicide amongst doctors was a huge taboo, which was never talked about. And I've spoken to experts who deal with healthcare professionals who are struggling, who are saying that the show has sort of opened the floodgates and meant that it's a conversation that hospitals are now having that they previously avoided. I've heard from doctors, nurses, midwives getting in touch on social media or through email to say that before they read my book or before they saw the show, they thought they were the only person who was struggling like that. And so I'm sure that, you know, whatever genre of drama you're making, you have the capacity to help people, even if obliquely or in some small way.
So do you believe that we can laugh about anything? This is a short question, but a big one.
That's a big question. Humour had a huge role in this show, not just because it's a comedy drama, but because comedy humour is crucial to many doctors. It's a way of coping. And it's not so much, I am laughing at this, but I'm using humour to get through this, without which I'm not sure I'd be able to continue to the rest of my shift. And when I was working as a doctor, for me, that was writing down at the end of a shift, looking for the light amongst the dark, looking for the funny, the silly, the disgusting, whatever it is. And I tried to tell that through the TV show. I mean, this character uses humour as a defence mechanism. It's both his armour and his weakness, and at times it's not appropriate, at times it doesn't help him, but it's all he's got.
So in the series This Is Going to Hurt, you choose to break the fourth wall to really implicate the viewer. Were you at all influenced by Fleabag by Phoebe Waller-Bridge?
It's a brilliant show. I'm a huge, huge fan of Phoebe and everything she does. We knew there had to be a way of somehow linking the TV show back to the diary. It's different in lots and lots of ways through the adaptation, but I wanted to maintain some link between the two, particularly because I thought it was important to know what's in this character's head. Stuff that I've talked about the repression that doctors often have. If someone never says this out loud, what he's thinking whilst he's saying something else to a patient. I don't think I could tell exactly what I wanted to tell. We experimented with voiceover, we experimented with all sorts of versions of speaking to camera, and we landed, so Lucy Forbes, the director of the first block, and Ben Wishaw, the plays the part of Adam brilliantly, found this quite subtle asides to camera, and there's no totally new way of doing it, and inevitably will be compared to shows who do it like Fleabag, and I'm honoured to be compared to Fleabag because it's a brilliant show.
And the music in the trailer is very upbeat, almost rock and roll, but there are also dramatic moments. So dramatic music. You talked about a lot of gear changes. So how did you work with the composer on that?
So it's a period piece set in 2006. Mm-hmm. And so in 2006, you know, our hair isn't that different, our clothes aren't that different, particularly when we're wearing scrubs half the time, and music is a great way of showing that. Lucy Forbes is a genius when it comes to music and soundtrack. I have no idea about any of it, and she had this constant, you know, playlist of songs that were inspiring her, and she knew she wanted to include. And her masterstroke was getting in touch with Jarvis Cocker, who had, you know, enormous fame and success as the lead singer of the band Pulp, who were, you know, absolutely enormous around that time. And his lyrics are poetry, and his music beautiful, and it had a huge impact on me. And when he agreed to write the soundtrack, that was a game change for me. And he's written some brilliant stuff, and Lucy's also chosen some wonderfully evocative tracks. And I hadn't realised until I saw, you know, watching the edits, how much of a difference the soundtrack can make. It can be absolutely transformative. The same scene with a slightly different track can sort of change.
Totally change, yeah. Mm. So we talked about Ben Wishaw, who plays you. How was he cast, and how did you work with him and guide him in order to help him be the best you that he could be?
Ben Wishaw doesn't need any guiding. Ben Wishaw is such a brilliant, intuitive actor. From the start, he was everyone's first choice, not just first choice, only choice. Yeah. We were so nervous sending him the script, hoping that it would speak to him, which thankfully it did. And I went out for drinks a few times with Ben, had evenings out, and it was only afterwards that I realised he wasn't just having drinks with me; he was also probably observing me and looking for the little characteristics. And it was funny. I was watching one of the early cuts of the show, and my husband said, "Oh, isn't it clever how he's got all of your weird mannerisms?" I was like, "I don't have weird mannerisms."
Of course you do, but you never realize it until you see someone.
Exactly.
That must be weird. we could say in a way that you have a French counterpart. I don't know if you know him, Thomas Lilty. He's a French family doctor, and he also wrote and directed Hippocrates, the movie and the TV show that's called Interns for You, I think. Have you met him, and would you like to work with him maybe one day?
I hadn't, to my shame, I hadn't heard of the show and the film until I came out to France. Mm-hmm. And I was speaking to some people from Canal Plus who were telling me all about it and singing its praises, and have promised to send it to me. So I'm very excited to watch that, because since I've been here, a lot of people have mentioned it, and it sounds really interesting. And it shows that there's a universality to this experience of what it's like to see the other side of a doctor.
Yeah, other people live the same thing. So,
absolutely.
And what is your position towards the other medical TV shows now, the ones that try to offer a new perspective? Because we still have the hero or a genius doctor in The Good Doctor or in New Amsterdam. But do you feel like there is an evolution in the tone?
I think we are fascinated in our bodies and how they go wrong and what happens in hospitals and the lives of doctors. And there's room for 1,000 types of medical show, from Scrubs at one end all the way to, you know, Grey's Anatomy, and showing doctors in all different sorts of ways. I zoomed in on one particular part of the experience, and there have been 1,000 shows before, there'll be 1,000 more shows, and honestly, I'll probably watch most of them.
Great. Well, yours is also, it will be major, and it is already. So thank you so much for writing it and showing it today at Série Série. And thank you for being with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.